Hey, it's Sergeant Stavros here from How Good Is This, the Thug Mills podcast. You know and love Thug Mills from our short film, Thuggies Do China.
So why don't you check out the pod?
Now, I won't try and convince you by pretending to be the Green Day manager. I've actually done something useful and prepared a compilation of our best skits. But I won't disrespect the 30-second time limit either, so I have to play them all at once.
Chat in the jar.
No time for me.
Right now, so hey, yeah. And now they do. Thug Mills.
Hello, folks. Welcome to the Antisocial Podcast. Before we kick into this week's episode, go and support Andy Dowling on his little Patreon account. Patreon.com/AndyDowling is the place to go to support Andy Dowling and his little old podcast, his little old radio show, the Antisocial Podcast. And from what I have been told, support starts from only a buck a month. Dirt cheap, as I've been told. Nice and cheap, set and forget. Don't even think about it. You won't even notice it. And if you're feeling generous, then maybe you can give him some more money and you'll get access to an exclusive little radio program that comes out every week through Patreon that the other people don't get. So you can listen to that as well. Patreon.com/AndyDowling. There we go, folks. Episode 243 of the Antisocial Podcast is right here in your ear holes, and this week's guest is Chris McEwan. You may know Chris. Chris is the frontman in Adelaide thrash metal band Hidden Intent. They've been around for a few years now. A great band. Seen them quite a few times over the years. And Chris is a bit of a legend in the Australian metal scene now. He's been actively involved not only with his band, but he's got his Churches of Steel festival in Adelaide each year. He's also got a bit of a booking agency happening. He brought Artillery, the Danish thrash metal legends, out to Australia not too long ago, and has been doing a lot of work with some other guys around the country. So many of us in the Australian metal scene are well aware of Chris, and he's just a top bloke. So why not have him on the podcast as well? You can go and check out Hidden Intent by going to hiddenintentofficial.com. Hidden Intent is all over the socials, and you can reach out to Chris by searching at McThrashy. Nice and easy. But I'll have all the links in the show notes over at andysocial.net and andydowling.net. Nice and easy. Enough crapping on from me. Please enjoy this great chat with Chris McEwan. You got to try and line some other stuff up around it. And the hardest thing in summer in Europe as well, is that they don't do a lot of club shows. You know, all the club tours happen sort of in the winter months, you know, in the off season. And so
I have to say though, it wasn't too bad, man.
It was all right.
After me, when we did it, I was the same as you, dude. I was like, oh no, I guess it's going to be so bad. We're going to play like Headbangers Open Air, and that'll be like the only good show. Because that last tour we did, I booked it all myself.
Yeah.
And I pulled my hair out doing it. Yeah, I just booking it all myself, you know, and just working all the logistics out and having all these different opinions, like what you've just said. Oh no, summer shows are going to be horrible. Rah, rah, rah. You're going to get like 10 people there, and then other people were saying, no, it's pretty good. Like, you'll be surprised. Not everyone goes to the festivals. Not everyone has that kind of money to do that.
Mm.
They'll just go to the local ones to make up for that. So it was actually not too bad, man. In a whole, I would say. Every show there, I would say out of the 10 or 11 shows we did, only one sucked.
Oh, that's all right. Which one sucked?
Surprisingly, the warm-up show of the Headbangers Open Air.
Ah, okay.
That was, it was at a bar really far away from the festival.
Hmm.
And I was thinking when I got there, I'm like, why is the warm-up show not where the festival is? You know, no disrespect. I love those guys, like the dudes that run Headbangers Open Air. You know, they're like brothers to me now. But I was just like, why? I think that was they had a relationship with the bar, and one of the promoters lives in the town of where this bar is. And I think I think his record store is across the road from it.
In Itzehoe, I think is the. Might be the town.
That's the one. So I think he was just like, hey man, I've got these bands that are keen for an extra show, and they're like, yeah, cool. And I think that's as far as it goes. But despite that, and even if it was a tiny little bar, it just didn't go very well. So next time if we play, I will I probably, yeah, I wouldn't play it. But I still had a wicked time. And the host, the guy that ran the venue, dude, he just, like, kept giving us drinks, man. Like, I'm thinking, is this guy, like, a volunteer here or something? Like, he just kept giving us beers after beers. And I was like, dude, I'm happy to pay. He goes, no, you've come such a long way. And rah, rah, rah. I run one of the small stages at Wacken, you know. Yeah. Like, I get it. I see bands like yourself just slugging it out, just trying to do this, and like I'm just, you know, I'm happy to put on it. We gave us a wicked feed, you know. So
yeah, well, I mean, I think that's some of the cool stuff that you have, you know, touring, especially when you're in a new place or a place that you don't have the presence that you do at home, and people can see that. And I think even some of those duds, those bad shows, end up still having some good memories attached to them, just from a good time, good people around you, and etc. I mean, I'm pretty sure we play that same club in Itzehoe. I think we may have done the after festival show, and we played with Hobbs Angel of Death, and we rocked up. Wow. And because it's a very small, it's a very, very small club, like very tiny little place.
Must be the same place. Yeah, I can't remember what it was called. Yeah,
I can't remember the name of the place, but I remember we got there in the afternoon. We're loading in. And I can't remember who we were speaking to at the time, but we were trying to work out, where's the worksheet? You know, what's the go? And everyone's like, there is none. And you're like, what do you mean? And they're like, it's a party. Like, just do whatever. I'm like, we need some structure here. And so it's like, well, what's the order of playing? And they're like, you guys work it out. And so here's us, like, with Peter Hobbs and the guys, and we're just looking at each other going, do you want to flip a coin or something? And we're like, fuck, we don't give a shit, whatever. Yeah, so we worked out. I can't remember. There was another band that played. I can't remember who it was, but it must have been just three bands. And it was fun. Not a lot of people showed up for that. But it was just a really cool. I mean, exactly what they said to us. It's a bit of a party vibe, and it's like, okay. So, and it pretty much was that. Yeah, and as you said, like there's certainly plenty of drinks and. And they took care of us, but it was just so loose and just way too casual for what we were expecting. We were expecting, you know, a gig.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it does sound like the same place now. big ass beers, right? Like,
oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. 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 I mean, you get that everywhere in Europe, but I was shocked by just, they just kept giving it out. I don't know if it was just like, maybe I'm a charming kind of guy or something. But I've just got this image in my head now, dude, of like Peter Hobbs and Lord Tim flipping a Euro. Oh, yeah. Like footy, you know, like the old, the matches where you flip in. Yeah, yeah. You know,
yeah,
which way are you going to go?
Oh, so funny. It was one of those moments where we're just looking at each other going, really? Like, is this where we've ended up, where we're flipping a coin in somewhere in Germany? Trying to work out who's going to play first in this tiny, tiny little club, like just tiny shoebox. And it was what it was. It ended up being really fun. And I mean, yeah, it was cool to be with some other Aussies there, and we're just all drinking and shooting the shit and telling lots of dumb stories. And it was just a fun vibe. But to begin with, we were very sort of reluctant and a little bit put off by the whole thing, because we're like, oh, this is not what we were expecting. This is not what we thought it would be. We thought it would actually be a club show with a few hundred people in a proper room, and like there's a worksheet and a stage manager, and just something you expect to play in a club. And wasn't that so?
But, yeah, I think it's a good idea. I just think have it in Hamburg, man. That's where everyone goes after the festival. Have it there. Like, have it somewhere where everyone's going, not making it really. I get that, you know, it's like across the road from the record store and blah, blah, blah. This is me probably, you know, being a little bit opinionated now, but whatever. I just think, like, you know, have it where everyone's going after. It makes so much more sense. I would have much preferred to do an after party, because I know heaps of crew that hung around after the festival that would have loved to have gone to something extra, and they ended up just drinking in metal bars.
Yeah, that's it. You know? Yeah, yeah. Well, there you go. The wonders of Europe. I mean, I love the place, and I think it's I'll never rule it out as far as, you know, spending some time over, like longer periods of time over there. But I think collectively as our band, I don't think that'll be on the cards. I think we're all getting a little bit too old collectively to to want to make that commitment. But I think the way things are now, like, I'm sure you guys sort of see it as well. I mean, my perception of you guys as a band is that you're very, and you yourself as well, being really DIY and really not hiding away from it, not shying away from it. It's almost like a badge of pride that you guys carry. And I think you know, it appears that you guys create your own opportunities. You don't wait around and, you know, cross your fingers and hope that, you know, some sort of opportunity is going to come knocking on the door. You just, you look around and go, what can I do with what I've got? And I think sometimes with us being where we are in the world, I think we become more creative because we don't have as many opportunities. And I think we have to start thinking outside the box and booking our own shows or doing whatever it is from a DIY perspective, because you just got to make it happen. So, I mean, that's the perception I have of you guys.
No, that's pretty bang on the money, dude. I remember there was a period with us where we had management and went through two managers. And then I think I was talking to Papa Riley from Desecrator. Hmm. And I really enjoy, I love talking to him. I love his episode on your show, by the way.
Oh, he's a legend.
And
yeah,
he's so good. Riley, you're a legend, mate, if you're listening. But I was going to say, like, there's one thing, I think pretty sure he said it to me. I'm fairly certain it was him. He said to me, you know, no one cares about your band as much as you do.
Mm.
And that stuck with me. I was like, that's so true. You can have the best managers, the best label, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, only you care about it the most, you know, no matter what, because it's your art. So that's when I sort of started being a bit more proud of being DIY rather than being, I used to think DIY was like, you know, we're not good enough kind of thing. I don't know if you ever felt like that, Andy.
Yeah. I mean, the perception of having, you know, management and having a label and just that all those, you know, that group of people around you where it's sort of, you know, it's the perception of being a professional band, you know, you're no longer the local band anymore. That's just sort of working out as you go. It's sort of like, you know, we've got a professional team around us, you know, we're part of the industry. And look, I think it still works in some cases for some bands, but I just see so many amazing pro bands that just do it all themselves. And I just think,
that's right. Yeah.
And eventually for us, I mean, years and years ago, I just remember sitting there and just getting really shitty about just not getting opportunities that other bands were getting. And then I sort of had this little, you know, little come to myself, you know, come to my own senses and just sort of thinking, well, hang on, what am I doing about it? You know, instead of sitting back and just, you know, expecting a manager or expecting somebody else to try and find opportunities for us, why don't I just fucking just go and do it myself? And that just started with booking shows and going from there. And then it, yeah, it became more of our identity that, you know, we get out there and we hustle and we grind. And I think we've always sort of cherished the whole working class element of our band. I know Riley's like, fucking, this is, you know, this is what he bleeds, this sort of stuff. I mean, I mean, if anybody wears this sort of stuff as a badge of honor, it's him. I mean, he's the Jimmy Barnes of thrash metal, Australian thrash metal. You know, he's the working class man.
That's the perfect way to put it. He should have that shirt.
There you go, a t-shirt for him.
There you go. Well, but you got to take commission for that, right?
Oh, no, I'll give him that one. Yeah, I'm a charitable guy. But I mean, for you guys, it must be a similar thing for you guys, no doubt. I mean, you know, after, you know, as you said, speaking to Riley about that sort of stuff and having a different perspective, once you get started and starting to do your own things, I guess, it, you know, the pieces start to fall into place where you realize that, you know, it comes back to you guys and what you put in.
Yeah, I mean, I'll gladly admit, I'm not one to be ashamed. I am a bit of a control freak. I mean, even when we were, I'm sure you might be relate to this too in some ways, Andy. Like, I mean, even we did have management, you know, I was still, you know, going over things that I probably should have just let them do it. But I was just, I don't know, it's just, when it's your art, you're always going to be, it's your little baby, you know what I mean? You got to just make sure everything's done properly. And most of the time it was, and it was fine. But in the end, it's always money, you know what I mean? It's always a money thing. Why we in particular ended up just going DIY and doing everything ourselves. It's no disrespect to anyone we've had. Youngie was great. Bailey was great. But yeah, it's just one of those things. I just think we can kind of manage it ourselves now. So.
Yeah, I think I mean, there's always a place for management, and it just really comes down to the band themselves, you know, what sort of unique positioning they have as a band, where they are in their career and what they need. You know, some bands need more help than others. You know, some bands have nobody as a front runner in the band, as far as somebody that wants to take some ownership and put the hard yards in above and beyond, you know, the creative and performing element of being in a band. And so for those situations, yeah, you need management. You need somebody to steer the ship and keep everyone in line and have a direction and keep people on course. But I don't know. I think just so many Aussie bands just out of necessity have had to create our own destinies, just out of, you know, just trying to find the pieces of the puzzle and just smash them into place and try and make them fit. And just that's just what you do. And I think for a lot of us, it's sort of management's just one of those things that just probably just doesn't tick the box like it would for other bands.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely one to admit, like, we are not the type of band where things get handed to us. Like, no way. Like, I myself, I always say that I am in particular a diehard C student. You know, like I don't think I've ever really had anything handed to me. I've had to work hard to get it. And it's the same with this band, like doing the management stuff. I've had to really work on pitching, you know, what it's like, pitching the right words to use and emails and learn from everybody, learn from guys like Matt Young and Bailey and even my girlfriend, actually, Jaira. She's got a strong business mindset. She ran, you know, she's run businesses in her job before. So hearing that, even just handing the laptop over to her every now and then and saying, what do you think of this? Do you think I'm wording this right? And her going, yeah, I think you're waffling on a bit here. Cut that out. He hasn't got time to read this. You know, it's like, okay, interesting. So, you know, allowing other people to sort of just take a look at what you're doing and just see if you can improve, you know.
Have you had any train wrecks in the past, any cringeworthy moments of trying to make something happen or communicate with somebody, or maybe sort of, you know, shooting too far too quickly and trying to hustle something and just hasn't quite worked out?
Oh yeah, man. Like, the old Chris, like, I was just so, like, too keen, you know, when you get someone that's just too keen, doesn't know how to just wait and wait for a reply. Yep. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I can't think of anything in particular, but there's been a few moments where, like, I've sent an email and I'm just, like, so eager, especially with this last European run we did, like, trying to get as many shows as we can. We ended up getting 11, I think, which is still pretty good for European summer. Your three festivals and a bunch of club shows. But I remember, like, just being, like, on my laptop at, like, 2 or 3 in the morning, you know, and, like, Jaira saying to me, like, babe, you got to wait 5 business days and then a follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, that's a really good thing to go by. I'll keep remembering that, like, 5 business days, follow-up. Because then it doesn't, you know, you don't come across as, like, annoying, you know?
Yeah, one thing I was listening to somebody the other day and they were talking about follow-ups and being persistent. And I think a lot of us sort of get a little bit worried about being persistent and following up because we think we're going to be annoying and harassing people.
Yes.
But I think it's like, who was it? Oh, there's this, okay, I know who it is. There's this guy called Derek Sivers and he formed CD Baby. And
Yeah, cool.
And he sold it 10 plus years ago, a long time ago. But now these days he just writes books and he calls himself a bit of a pop philosopher these days. But he was talking about the old follow-up and he said, so many people are reluctant to follow up or be persistent to try and, you know, go after something. Because, you know, when you're a kid and, you know, maybe you've got a love interest or a crush on somebody, and if you're persistent in that manner, then you can come across as being, you know, really rude and inconsiderate because that person's telling you to basically bugger off, but you're continuously sort of trying to, you know, pursue this person. But when it comes to, like, business or just being in the adult world, being persistent and following up is actually a sign of respect, because if you sent one inquiry out or a request or a question or something like that and you never followed up again, then maybe it just means that you weren't really 100% committed to actually following through with that in the first place anyway. So if you're following up second, third, fourth time, then it actually shows that you're giving that person respect because you actually genuinely want to work with that person. You want that opportunity. You want their help. You want whatever that request is. And it can separate you from the pack in a way. So it was an interesting way of thinking about it because I've never thought about it. I always cringe when I have to send a follow-up email to somebody. Even now I go, oh, man, I don't want to be that pest. I don't want to be that annoying person. But maybe... Maybe it can be a good thing. Maybe people just ignore the first email and go, well, we'll see if they actually follow up and if they actually mean business. You know, see if there's a bite behind that bark, and maybe the second follow up, then they pay attention. And go, all right, well, let's actually read the email and see what they're all about.
Yeah, I mean, I can. Yeah, you just hearing you talk about that, Andy. Like, I can remember. When we got the Headbangers Open Air show last year, I've told this story to a few people. It's pretty ridiculous, dude. Like, so SBNR has obviously got it, as you know.
Yeah.
And I saw that they got it and I was like, oh, cool. Maybe we can play it. Cool. Because I love those guys. Like, I feel like Frosty's like my, the power metal version of myself. Like,
I can
just
see
got
that.
Like, yeah. Blonde, long hair. We both play similar bass. He's got my old bass. He bought my old
bass. Oh, really? Oh, nice.
That I used on Addicted to Thrash and those songs. Like, and because I had it and I was like, I'm just not digging this, man. I love it, but it's just. And then he inquired about it and I was like, dude, this bass suits you so much. I'm going off on tangent here, but I have to tell you this. And he bought it off me and then like next thing it's like, oh, what pedals do you use? Oh, I use a Dark Glass pedal. And then he's like, bought that. And then next thing I'm selling like a Dark Glass head that I had, I upgraded to the more powerful one. Dark Glass is like, yeah, as you would know, the sex with bass sound.
Yeah.
And I wanted the more, I kept having issues with the 500 watt head, so I upgraded to the 900.
Right.
And he bought that one off me. So it's just like, I know, we just get along so well and rah, rah, rah. Anyway, and I love Dennis and the rest of the guys too. But anyway, they're on this festival, so I thought, oh, I'll apply for it. Who's the guy that runs Headbangers Open Air again? It's two guys.
Oh, Jürgen's probably the main guy.
Jürgen, that's the one. Jürgen, and then the other guy does the behind the scenes stuff. Yeah, like he owns the property and that. Mm. Yeah, yeah. But Jürgen, I emailed him and he straight out just said no. And I was like, okay, all right, way to shoot the duck in the sky, mate.
Very German. Not going to beat around
the
bush. Yeah,
very German. He may as well just said like nine. And I was like pretty gutted. I was like, oh, okay, spewing, man. And maybe I thought for a second, oh, it's a bit more of a power metal-y kind of festival. And I looked at the bill and I was like, no, there's a few thrash bands on there. So I pulled something out of my ass. I thought, nah, I've got to be more genuine here. Stop being so always want. Let's just have a conversation and let's just see what happens, you know. Be myself a bit more. So I emailed the guy back and I said, no worries, mate. Thank you very much for getting back to me. It was something along the lines of I totally get it. I run a small festival in my hometown called Churches of Steel, with similar sort of genre. We've had some of the bands that have played your festival. Yeah, totally get it. I hope to play it someday. If not, I might, you know, attend it as a patron and have a beer, something like that. And then it was so weird. We were on tour and we were playing some weird ass town in New South Wales. And I remember Doug Dalton tagging that his brother lived close to it. Where was it? Oh, New South Wales somewhere. It's really cool. It was a really good show, actually.
Yeah.
Not many metal bands play there. And I think it was the last place that Hobbs Angel of Death played.
Oh,
down
the south coast or something.
Yeah, Heathen Fest, wherever that is.
Okay.
I can't remember the name of it.
Or something like that, maybe, or...
Say that again.
Is it Marua?
That's it. That's the one, man. Yeah. You should play there, dude. It's
very
really
south
good.
Coast. Yeah, cool.
It's killer, man. Like, because I mean, Hidden Insane, we love playing like Aussie. We've got the whole Aussie theme going. So playing those towns, like generally we go down pretty well. Even if it's a small crowd, they'll all buy something. You know how it is.
Yeah.
And we're playing there and we finish the show. It's a good set, you know, drinking. And I go to the loo. And I've got this habit, Andy, right? I can't help it. When I take a piss, I usually get out my phone and just have a flick through, you know. I'm one of those guys. Wash my hands, of course, you know. But but I just have this habit. I don't know. I can never switch off.
Yeah.
I'm on the edge all the time. I don't know. it's a bad habit, but like, there's worse things I could be addicted to, besides thrash metal, of course. But I'm going through, no pun intended, but I go through and I see this email from Jürgen, and he goes, he replies saying, "Oh, I didn't realize you run this festival. Oh, I can see here you've had a few bands, yes, that have played Headbangers Open Air. Actually, there is a slot for you on the Thursday. It's on the same day as Queensryche. This is the payment. This is the deal. If you're happy, let's proceed." And I was like, looking at this email going, dude, you said no to me before. Like, this is just so weird. And I ended up running up to Paul, our drummer. I'm like, dude, we're playing at a festival. Because I was telling him the story in the car, how he said no.
Hmm.
And then he was like, oh, sick. So that was the first show we got.
That's
and
so cool.
Just based the whole tour around that. Ended up being probably, I know you've played Headbangers Open Air. It's one of the highlights of, like, my career so far, if you call it a career.
So fun.
So good. Like, I just remember, like, setting up my pedals. I was like, you know, it is a big show like that. You're a bit nervous, you know. And I just remember looking out into the crowd, and there's like 2,000 or so just German metalhead guys just like ready to fucking party. You know, I'm just like, and then up the front, all the guys from, you know, the Sydney metal scene, you got like Mike Ryan, George, yeah, and those dudes, and they're all like, "Hey, going, cunts?" Fucking yeah. It was this total contrast between the German metalheads and the Nazis up front. And that was so much fun, man. Like, I just remember walking off that stage just with this big grin on my face. So good.
That's so cool. I mean, especially, I mean, what a great little lesson for anybody who's a muso listening to us, you know, talk shit, because, you know, so many times, like, I've fallen into this over the years, you know, you get a no from somebody and you go, oh, damn, you know, and then you move on and you leave it at that. But, fuck oath for following up and even as you said, it wasn't even a case of, I'm not going to accept no for an answer. It's just a case of being polite and giving a little bit more context, talking about who you are a little bit, and just being really sort of soft in your approach. And, you know, I mean, he could have turned around and just said, oh, cool, thanks, or maybe not even got replied back to you again, but it worked. And I think that just goes to show that, you know, it's worth just keeping it open. A no is not always, I think a lot of people sort of think that a no means you're shit, don't talk to me.
Yes.
You know, no chance.
That's exactly right.
But a no could be
a bit too sensitive, I would say.
Oh, yeah. And
I'm falling into that myself. Oh, I'm sure you have too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think everyone hates to get rejected in some way or another. So I think it's sort of, that's sort of your default sort of feeling when you get a rejection, and you just think, oh, what's wrong with me, or what's wrong with what we're doing, or whatever it might be that we're asking for. And, I mean, who knows what's going on the other end? I mean, you know, could have had a full lineup at the time, and then in between emails, somebody pulled out, or maybe there was a change in their times or whatever it is, and suddenly had some opening or whatever it might be. Or maybe he just had no clue who you were, and suddenly there was a little bit more legitimacy put against your name and reputation. And suddenly he thought, well, no, now this person's worth working with, and let's make it happen. So it's cool. I love that. I love those stories. It's persistence.
One,
I love it.
One email created an entire, just a little change of sort of approach, created a whole opportunity, not only one opportunity, but a whole other opportunities built around it. And I remember, like, we got that show and I was like, how the hell are we going to get these other shows? And back then we were just sort of at the end of working with Hard Drive at that point. And even the booking agent we had there, because we were sort of working together, and we were both just pulling our hair out, you know, like, and kudos for them for the efforts they put in, but, you know, I was just going through, and I ended up just going, hang on a second, we did the tour with Lich King. Why don't I just look up the same events we did on that tour and see who booked those shows?
Perfect.
Sure, one of them who will say yes, because A, they've seen us before, or at least know of us. They might have been drinking at the bar while we're playing. I don't know. But, you know, we might have been good enough to maybe, you know, go to the same venue. And, yeah, like half of them pretty much got back to me and said, yeah, we'd love to have you. So That's all it takes.
It's perfect. I mean, it's just, it's so easy for bands just to go, oh, you know, it is what it is, or, you know, yeah, too hard, or, you know, we're not getting the opportunities. And, you know, you know, traditionally over the years, like, well, probably more decades ago now rather than sort of recent years, but, you know, you would rely on, you know, an agent, you know, or management or whoever it is to organize it. But no, like, we've all got the internet now, and we've all got people's details, and we can contact venues directly. We can find the local bands, we can find the local promoters, and we can, you know, it might be really painstaking to try and piece it all together, and it's a lot of manual, tedious work, but you can do it. I mean, and I mean, that just goes to show. I mean, you guys made it happen, and I mean, that's awesome. And I think, obviously, I would assume that even just going and doing Headbangers, that probably opened up, I assume, like you did Artillery. Would that have sort of linked in similar sort of circles with working with those guys?
Yeah, we did a China tour with Artillery back in 2015, I want to say.
I forget you played China.
Yeah, we played twice, man.
Yeah, what? Yeah. Yeah,
so we just got Paul in the band, so he came in and we tried out three guys after our last drummer quit, and yeah, and then how's this? I'm like, oh, you're in the band. Do you want to play China with us? With Artillery? And he's like, yep, sick. So we got this, yeah, you know, it's like, you know, and you'd sort of someone like Paul, you know, with his skills, just going to that next level, you know what I mean? In terms of, you know, that I guess the more technical sides of thrash metal, in terms of the drumming and the speed, etc. I remember having to, like, turn up more when he joined us. Just a bit of a hard hitter, you know.
Yeah, nice.
I was used to, like, the groovier styles of our last drum, more of like a Black Sabbath Bill Ward, you know, which is cool too. I love both sides of that. But, yeah, met up with the Artillery there. Kept in contact with them, and then I sort of, when we were doing flying over there, I said, guys, would you be able to hook us up with like with a show, and in return I might be able to help you guys down here. I know you guys want to play in Australia. And then they said, look, we're all pretty flat out at the moment with like family and kid, you know, etc., but we've got this show if you want it in our hometown. And I'm like, sick, let's do it. We ended up bloody staying with the at the singer's house, because it was perfect, like the way the routing worked. It was like that show in Denmark and the next one was sort of in northern Germany, and I remember we played the show and I got to try for the very first time at this venue. The rider for the night was the new Metallica beer.
Oh right, okay.
Yeah, so jeez. A whole fridge slab full of like this Metallica beer, and I'm like, I wait till after I play to drink,
yeah,
and because just singing and
stuff. Smart man.
And yeah, I didn't used to be, but now I'm like, nah. People have paid to be here. We're in Europe. Like, I'll just wait. You know? So it's annoying watching the other guys drink while I like sit there with my like lemon tea, but yeah, and honey. But, yeah, played the show, and half of the guys in Artillery weren't really drinking because they were like, you know, it's like their hometown. So a lot of them drove and were like going home to their, you know, respective places. But Michael, the singer, I was like, dude, I know we're giving you a lift to your place because we're staying with you. Like, we're getting on it, man. And he was like, I love that singer, Artillery, because he's a great bloke, but he's his English is different to the rest of them.
Right.
The rest of them kind of speak a broken Danish kind of English, Danglish. And, Michael, I got to call him Dahl because of the other Michael that plays guitar, Stutzer. You got Stutzy and Dahl. Dahl, he learned the British English. Right. When he talks, he's like, oh, yes, hello, Chris, how are you? Like, it's awesome. You got this wicked contrast in the band. But, yeah, hearing him in the car, like, just drinking, we were just non-stop drinking all the way back to his place because it was a fair drive. Had to go over a few of the bridges and pay the bloody tolls. You'd know that going through Europe. Like, oh, so many tolls, man.
Yep.
And so expensive, but yeah. in the car, like he's just waffling on because he likes to chat, and so do I. And away he goes. And then there's a point in the conversation where we're just stopping and he's just like, oh, let's just talk about something else, shall we? Let's talk about tits and ass instead. So we'll just piss ourselves. So good.
And now up to his now house. For something completely different.
Yeah, he's in this tiny little like town in Denmark, and I forget where it was, but lovely place, and this beautiful wife, like, you know, making us breakfast in the morning, and we're all like hungover, trying to get up at 8, and there's this kid coming up to us, like staring at us in the face, because he just had a kid, you know. Yeah, it was cool.
These are Australians. These are thrash metalers from Australia.
Yeah. And then, like, we're having, Paul wakes me up. He's like, dude, like, come on, we've got breakfast on here. Like, be respectful, get up. And I'm like, yeah, cool. So we all got up, and our driver, Swedish bloke that we know from the chainsaw guys, he was still sleeping. I'm like, yeah, we'll let him sleep because he's got to drive and stuff. So ended up trying to quietly eat this beautiful meal, try not to wake him up. And then, it's like 8 in the morning, and Dale's just like, do you guys want to have a drink? And I'm like, not really. And he's like, yeah, well, you got a show tonight, right? I'm like, yeah. He goes, oh, but, you know, you'll be right. And I'm like, okay. And that day we were going to go to check out another festival in Denmark. What's it called? Metal Magic. Have you heard of that one?
I've heard of.
Yeah, it's really hard to get on, but Dale was like, look, I've put you all on the door. I know the guy that runs it, so it might be good for you to go and network, but, you know, you might want to lubricate first, so let's get on it. Start drinking again. I'm like, this is crazy. Jesus, I'm glad I'm not driving, you know.
Hair of the dog. So,
hair of the dog, man. Start drinking again. We did some shots of Jaeger.
Oh, and
I'm
God.
Like, and his wife's a very, like, timid sort of lady. And I'm like, is she okay with this? you know when you can't tell if someone's, like, annoyed or not?
Yeah.
You're just like, is she okay with this? I don't know. Anyway, he's the man of the house, whatever, you know. Like, just go along with it. And then, yeah, I'm, like, half cut getting to this festival, trying to work out what I'm doing, and I'm like going up to the thing, and oh, apparently we're on the door, we're just here to check out the festival and give the CD to the promoter. And they're like, yeah, cool, you get drink tickets and a meal voucher. I'm like, oh, really? And they're like, yeah, you're guests, so, you know, it's all good, you get the media pass or whatever it is. I'm like, oh, thank you very much. So we're going in there, and I'm like just trying to Skype call my girlfriend, drinking beers, like, and we're just hanging out there. And I met one of the promoters, but it was so awkward. I felt so bad because I was like, oh, I've got to do this business thing now. You know, when you're at these things, and you're like, oh, I've got to do business now. Okay, slap myself in the face. All right, come on, be professional. And I find one of the promoters of the festival, and she's like so nice to me. But behind her is this guy being attended to by first aid.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, she's like, oh, thank you very much for giving the CD. I'm like, yeah, it's cool. I know, I get it if you need to get going. She's like, still talking to me. And I'm like, behind her is this guy that's passed out. And these people were trying to get him revived.
Oh, God.
And I'm like, trying to talk to her. And I'm just like, yeah, I got to go, lady. I can't concentrate here. You know what I mean? So I just like, thank you very much for having me. She's like, yeah, no problem. Try again next year. I'm like, yeah, no worries. Thank you. And I just like bolted out of there.
Oh, God, that is so funny. How awkward.
Nah, she was really cool. I just felt bad because I could tell she was trying to, you know, you get that in Europe a lot, I find, is that like, either the not so polite, very upfront, no, yes, very direct, or the other end of it where they're like super polite, you know, like very overly welcome. It appears to be, in my eyes, overly welcome. I don't know if you've experienced that.
Yeah.
Or it's like, I get it. If you've got shit to do, it's okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, I think it's one of those things like I've certainly done over the years where you try to, you have those moments, I think, just like you said before, you sort of give yourself a bit of a slap and it's like, all right, I've got to try and try and network here. I've got to try and build a connection. I've got to try and you know, leave my mark and you know, ensure that you know, at the end of the night I've you know, left a good reputation, a good memory behind with whoever it is, whether it be a promoter or another band member or whatever it might be. And
I've had some
good nights doing that. I've had some absolutely fucking shit nights doing it, thinking that at the time I was like, oh yeah, fucking nailed that one. Like, great pitch, you know, great explanation of what we're doing and what we're all about, and asking lots of interesting questions, and the next day going, oh no. No, nobody even has to tell me. I remember everything, and it's shocking. So, yeah, I've certainly felt that before.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, you know, I'm still trying to find my, I guess, my balance of like party Chris and also like manager Chris. So I have to sort of like, you know, find the balance of being, you know, being myself, being a little bit party, but also like, hang on, we're going to be professional here, you know.
That's right. It's almost like you need a little alarm clock, and when the alarm goes off, that's when everything else is off. You've done what you need to do, and now you can let loose a little bit more, and maybe find a quiet spot in the corner somewhere in the dark, away from the people of influence, so you can just bring your little your posse of friends over into the corner and just drink up over there, away from the movers and shakers. But I'd hate to think what some people have thought of me over the years, just being at gigs and me come up and spit in someone's face because I've had too many beers, trying to tell them this long-winded, you know, really interesting story in my head, and then realize later on that it was not interesting whatsoever. But at the time, oh man, you got to hear this, you know. But hey, it comes with the territory.
Yeah, I can relate to you a lot, Andy, because, like, you know, as you said previously tonight, you know, you're the youngest in the band and you do most of the management booking stuff, and I feel you, man. Like, yeah, you're out there trying to, you know, you network and try and tick the right boxes, but also be yourself. And every time I've seen you out, dude, I've always thought that you carry yourself in a good way. You know when to party, when's your time to take off your hat, and when to put it back on again. You know, that's something that's really hard to do for a lot of people, I think.
Well, yeah, I mean, it might just be because I'm getting older, so.
That's definitely it. We're more young, we're just stupid. Actually, I was just remembering on the drive coming home from work, of like, when did I first meet you, dude? But I remember you sent me some like posters to put in venues and stuff.
Yeah, right, okay.
From ESP, I think. Oh, I remember that.
Right. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, you sent me that back when I sent you our first album to hand out with your orders.
Yeah,
I remember that. I can't remember when I actually met you, though.
Yeah, no idea. It might have been, I don't know what gig it was, but I think you guys might have been in Sydney playing the Stag at the time. And I think I might have bumped into you up the road at the servo, and I think you're getting money out of the ATM at the servo, and I think I bumped into you then and quickly introduced myself, possibly. I remember that happening, but I don't know whether that was the first time or
that
not.
That sounds familiar.
But that was many years ago.
You saw our first Sydney gig, I remember that, and there was like, you know, not a lot of people there, but, you know, they got into it and they had a good night. Credit to Luke Horvath, who's like always stood by us. You know,
he's dedicated to the cause.
He's such a nice guy, man. Yeah. Like, you know, I love him, man. He's so into it. You know, he's a truly one of a kind of guy. You know,
yeah. There's a few heavy metal warriors in Sydney that are keeping it alive. I mean, it'd be interesting to see what happens, you know, sort of tail end of this year when the usual Steel Assassins rolls around and Dave's got his thing happening, and the guys sort of get behind him and help with his festival, because, who knows what's going to happen. So, but I know Luke had to can his show this year, and we'll see what happens. But those guys have always sort of just kept things going when things haven't been great in Sydney for a few years, and they just haven't slowed down. They just kept chipping away, you know, just absolutely, you know, dedicated to the cause for sure.
Yeah, like, I've really looked up to Dave Balfour, Luke, Stu McGill, Dennis, Jason North, my buddy here. Those guys I just like, I really look up to. And when I first decided about, you know, if doing the Churches of Steel Fest, I sort of, you know, took a page out of everyone's book, as you do. I just wanted to do something more on the Legions of Steel, Steel Assassins. There's a lot of steel, isn't there? I thought, well, City of Churches, Church of Steel, I wanted to do more of a traditional metal approach here in Adelaide. Those guys are always on my mind when I'm, you know, doing it every year. I'm just like, yeah, I'm going to be at Steel Assassins this year if it goes ahead, by the way.
Yeah, cool. Awesome.
I love going to that festival, dude. It's so much fun. And I just discover so many new bands, you know. Dave's just got his finger on the pulse, you know. So much of the on the underground scene, I think, more than anyone I know.
It's a cool place to do exactly what we were talking about before, network. But also it is such an inviting atmosphere every year, no matter where that festival is being held, where just everybody is just so obsessed with just, you know, old school heavy metal, and everybody loves a drink and everyone's loose and just having a good time and no one's uptight about anything, and just a really loose, fun, wild couple of days, and just, you know, and it's fun to look around and see mates, you know, meeting people for the first time, and you can see sort of these relationships form where bands start working with each other and touring and doing stuff together. And but at the same time, it's not ultra stiff where people are trying to maintain this level of professionalism. Everyone's just sort of going, hey, you know, hey, nice to meet you, hey, let's do something sometime, yeah, cool, sounds good, let's drink more beer, you know. And it's just a cool vibe that that he's created there. So yeah, hopefully it goes ahead this year, so we'll see what happens.
I'm so keen. My girlfriend and I we're definitely going, and I know for a fact Frosty from Espionage and his lovely partner there, Nikita, I know we're going to look at doing a snazzy Airbnb together if it all goes ahead. So,
sounds good.
I'm talking like, you know, the Hangover style. Like, I want to get like a bloody massive spa on a rooftop or something crazy. You know what I mean? Like, just because, like, I haven't been able to leave Adelaide in so long. You know, I want to go all out. This might be the last time ever before the next wave comes. You know,
that's it. That's it. If we get that little window, come over quick.
Mate, I might even just stay there and annoy you.
Oh, no complaints, mate. We need a few more thrash metalers over here in Sydney. So, yeah, we might not let you leave. So there you go. But I'm certainly trying not to talk too much COVID stuff, but you know, how's it affected you guys as a band? Because I know I saw a post a couple of days ago where you guys are just getting to the tail end of recording, and so you've been doing that. But what were the plans for this year? Like, is it on track, or is it completely different?
Mate, it was we were supposed to go to Europe in July. We had a festival booked in the Czech Republic. So, again, I was trying to, you know, get the festival and then start doing shows around it. I like to call the festivals, to me, are like the anchors of a tour.
Yep.
And then sort of work out, okay, what's around that we can do that, you know, makes it more worthwhile. And then we were supposed to play next month in the US. We were supposed to play Full Terror Assault officially, because last time, and I'll tell you the story about us playing it unofficially in a minute, but this year we were supposed to play it. Headlining is Exodus and Gore.
Was there a show poster for this one? Because I vaguely remember seeing something. I remember seeing something.
Yeah,
going,
there was.
Man.
It was like going to be huge. I was like, Exodus, man. It was so funny because we just supported Dark Angel last year with Truth Corroded. The guitar tech of Dark Angel is the guitar tech for Gary Holt.
Right.
And he came up to us. I met him at the airport because I did the driving. I help out Hardline Media with a bit of driving and merchandise selling and that kind of thing because I love Doug and I love Pod, you know. And Gene Hoagland sat right next to me in my van and I was like shitting myself.
Pinch yourself.
We had two vans and it was grand final day. So it was 2 8-seaters. We couldn't get 12-seaters for Dark Angel. And a my i30 just to transport Doug and Pod. But it was so funny, dude. I'm going off a tangent here, but whatever. When we rocked up to pick him up, like the singer Ron and the guitarist Eric and his wife were like, just like, I want to be in the car with the dog because my Frenchie was in the back. And they were like, just straight into that car. I want to be in this car because there's a dog here. I feel like home. So they were like, and then Gene Hoagland like came out to, because I had the window down, he came up to the car and was like patting my dog. I wish I got a photo of that, of just like Gene Hoagland just casually patting my my Frenchie Zumi. His name is Zumi. And it would have been so good. I could have like, oh, I just like stalled. I was like, what the hell is happening here? And I'm in the car, like in the van driving, talking to him about bloody the death Chuck Shoulder days, and it was so cool. But where was I going with the Sandy?
So you got to play the US this year officially.
Oh, the US. Yeah. And the guitar tech. So we played the show with Dark Angel in Adelaide, and then he comes up to us, the guitar tech. He was a bit quiet when I picked him up. I mean, he might have been a bit tired or whatever. And he handed me a coffee. I wanted to have a sip of his coffee, and I'm like, nah, it's cool, man. It's all right. Imagine doing that now during Corona.
Yeah, I know. It's like
no one would do
the
that
fuck?
Now. Back then, someone handing you their coffee to drink, you know. We played the show and he was like, I sense a really good future with you guys. Mm. And I was like, really? You just saying that, man? Because it was his birthday that night. I thought maybe he had a few drinks, you know what I mean? And I was like, I get it. You've had a few drinks, Jay. He's like, no, really, like, you're onto something here. And I'm like, okay, cool. And then we ended up getting the Exeter show because he gave Phil a few Gary Holt guitar picks and Phil was like fucking loving it.
Yeah.
And I ended up messaging him. I'm like, dude, we're playing Full Tour Assault with Exodus. And he was like, hell yeah, man. He was loving it and he was trying. He was going to look into extra shows for us, not with Exodus, but with some other bands. Obviously it didn't pan out because of COVID. But, yeah, potentially, dude, this year could have been Europe and US back to back.
Oh, what a bummer.
No, man.
What were you going to say before about last year was an unofficial?
Oh, yes. Thank you. Thanks for jogging my memory, mate.
It's all right. It's not often.
Yeah, so the last Full Tour Assault work that we played was in 2018 and we did the 7-week tour with Lich King over in the US. So Full Tour Assault is I don't know if you know much about it. It's like a little festival in Illinois. It's in the middle of nowhere. It gets a pretty good crowd. Be like sort of like a small kind of, I got to say attendance-wise, like a small Soundwave kind of thing.
Yep.
It's not massive, but it's pretty big, you know. And so we got the tour with Lich King. But that show, that was their Lich King's anchor. We talked about anchors before. Yeah. That was their anchor for that whole tour. They built a whole tour around it in the US. And they do big runs, man. Like this tour was 42 shows, I think. Might have been 39 in the end with a few cancellations, if I recall correctly. But this one show, we applied too late. And then we were like, oh, that's okay. We'll go and party with Lich King. You know, that's cool. So I'm standing there, man, in my Hawaiian shirt with a bloody drinking a rum. You know, I'm in party mode. Like, I'm not playing. I'm like, whatever. And this cute little Native American kind of chick walks up to me. And she's like, oh, are you touring with Lich King? You're in Hidden Intent, right? I'm like, yeah. And she goes, oh, I'm one of the co-organizers of the festival. And I'm like, oh, cool. Very nice to meet you. And we're sitting there headbanging away to some Lich King. I was just so proud to see those guys on a bigger stage, you know, like my boys. And then the song finished and she goes, I was going to ask you, where's your gear? I said, oh, it's in that van right there. Because this festival, dude, you could just pull up your car. Like it was like going to a local footy oval, you know. You could just pull your car up, unload your stuff, away you go. It's all good. And she goes, oh, hang on 1 minute. I just got to take a phone call. I said, okay, no problem. I'm like, head banging away, you know, spilling drinks all over myself. And she comes back and she goes, can I talk to you for a sec? I said, yeah, okay. And she goes, oh, tomorrow a band pulled out of their slot because there was bad weather in Houston. Mm. And I'm like, oh, okay. And she goes, oh, do you want to take their slots right before Havoc?
Oh.
And I'm like, it's right before Havoc. Yes. I felt like for a second, dude, I just think talking about it, I thought of like the end of Dumb and Dumber. The correct town is that way.
Yeah.
But I managed to
say the right thing. Yeah.
I was like, yes. And she goes, look, we can't pay you, but we can give you, you know, we can give you a good time. And I'm like, yeah, that's cool. We were here to party anyway. We're just here as guests of Lich King. And she was like, be here tomorrow at this time. Don't be late to set up your gear. And I told the guys, because we had a fill-in drummer for that tour. Mm. We had Con. You've met Con. He was from Shadow Realm and Oath of Damnation.
Yep.
Great mate of mine. He filled in for that tour. His Paulie was teaching more then. And Phil did not believe me. He was like, ooh, shit. And I'm like, I'm serious, dude. We're playing here. This is the set time. This is it. Rah, rah, rah. And he's like, oh, believe it when I'm on stage. I'm like, okay, mate. Okay. And we get to like being on stage and actually like warming up, and Phil, I could see, he was so nervous. And I was like, dude, come on, man. And he rushes backstage and because he was in the States for the first time. I've been not over the States a few times because my ex-girlfriend was American, but nothing really that new to me. But he was backstage like, smashing shots of what is that bloody Dimebag drink? Not the Black Tooth Green, the actual whiskey. What's it called again?
Oh, I don't know. Oh, it's the Black Tooth Green.
What's it called? Crown Royal.
Oh,
Crown
Royal. Yeah. Oh,
he just like the whole tour, he was just buying bottles of it. He was just like in US mode, you know what I mean? And he just like smashed a few of those, got up, and we played. And it was so cool, man, just watching. Seeing, you know when you play to a crowd that have never heard you, right?
Mm.
And you look out and you can just see them creep slowly they creep forward the more the set progresses.
Yeah,
it was like, because we played on this kind of like, you could look up and there was a little hillside where all the people were camping, and we could see people running down, like, yeah, fuck a thrash metal. Yeah, running down, and it was so cool. By the end of the set, it was like packed. I was like, "Wow!" I fully got to see the magnet in its true form. Yeah. You know,
and especially playing before Havoc as well. I mean, you know, you would have had the audience that you wanted ready, primed, waiting for Havoc anyway. So, I mean, perfect spot. Perfect spot to be.
Dude, it was like middle of the day. It was actually a really good slot. Lich King played, they headlined the first night, and we played middle of the day on the second day, I want to say. And it was the same day of like Havoc, Toxic Holocaust, Overkill on the bigger stage, Goat Whore on the bigger stage. Wow. Like we played the smaller stage, the thrash stage, I guess. But it was weird. Crowbar headlined it, but it had like, Toxic and some other thrash bands. Oh, it was so cool.
Wow.
And who else played? Iron Regan played.
Yeah, wow. Jeez.
So I got to, I didn't get to meet Joel Grime, but I did get to meet the Havoc guys. That was pretty cool. And I was watching side of stage, and I could see the drummer of Havoc setting up and just like warming up. And then I could see Dave, the main guy, staring at Phil. It was really cool. And Phil like came up to me after the gig, and he was like, he gets a little emotional if it's a really big show, you know, in a good way. And he was like, dude, Dave from Havoc like complimented me on my guitar playing, man. I'm like, dude, that's fucking awesome.
Yeah,
like,
cool.
Hell yeah. That's so cool. So,
I mean, that stuff like that. I mean, yeah, for sure. I mean, you guys got an official invite this year, and it was all locked in to go and do it and everything like that. But I mean, you know, doing that a couple of years earlier, I think, I mean, it's such a cool story. And I mean, really, I mean, it's kind of why we do all this sort of stuff, is to be in those moments where, you know, it's just this unexpected sort of thing going, who else gets to do this kind of stuff? and just the sequence of events that plays out. It's just, man, I mean, that's, they make great stories as you're telling me now, like retelling it. It's just like so fucking cool. And I mean, despite all, you know, all that sort of slogging and to do like whatever it was, 39, 40 odd shows through the US, which would have been, oh man, that would have been exhausting. Like, I'm sure it would have been an amazing experience, but that would have been an exhausting run of shows. So, you know, just to have memories would be just absolute gold.
Oh, mate, like, yeah, that tour was just so long. It got to a point where, because we'd only really done like 2 week kind of runs, you know, week and a half. And then we did 7 weeks over there because we did 2 weeks with Lich King in Europe. We could only do like 1/3 of the whole tour. So it was really funny seeing the Europe tour poster because it was like Lich King and then it had the three supports because they specifically said for that tour in Europe that they needed a three-piece band because that's the only amount of seats they had left in the van.
No, right.
So it worked out really well to have us on there because, you know, three-piece. So, you know, it came handy for once. And, it was just funny. You're seeing all the bands in the same position as us. Like, they had us the dates that we were playing, the next support act, the dates they were playing, the next support act, the dates they were playing on the tour. Like, you know, Hidden Intent not appearing, like, yeah, it's crazy. But then we did with the US, we were like, nah, we're going all in on this one. Like, we did the 2 weeks, we're hungry for more kind of thing. And I felt like I was living in the States, Andy.
No. Oh.
Like, just driving around gig to gig, not really expecting a whole lot, meeting all these cool people. Like, America has this sort of like reputation for being kind of rude.
Mm.
But I actually, when I was over there, I dated someone that was American, but she was from Austin, Texas. So that's a bit different to the rest of America. That's sort of a different kind of city. But just going around, I'm like, you know what? They're actually like pretty friendly. I just think they're very upfront, which can come across rude. Adelaide, I mean, Australia and in Adelaide in particular, they like to bend around the bush a bit, I think, you know? At least I find anyway, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's just over there, they're just very to the point, you know, which is kind of refreshing sometimes, man. I like the whole upfront thing. It's like, yeah, let's just get to the point here.
I always found that with certain parts of Europe. I think Europe is not, Europe's a massive place, so it's a bit hard to sort of paint the same brush over the entire continent. But, you know, certain countries in Europe, I think just culturally, you know, they're not really sort of, they're very efficient in the way they talk. They don't want to have small talk. They don't want to just talk shit or beat around the bush or like we do. I mean, I think we all sort of Australians sort of, you know, with our culture is that we love to talk shit. We love a long-winded story. We love just dribbling mess and whatever. And I think, you know, so many friends that I've now, like I've met and stayed in touch with over the years that live in, you know, Sweden or Norway or Germany or wherever. And it just, they'll just say what's on their mind and they'll just get it out. And they're not really sort of umming and ahhing about whether they should say it or not. If it's something they need to say, they just say it. And they just also get really impatient when you start to do your typical waffling, you know, from your Australian cultural perspective, and you can see them sort of glaze over and they're like, what are you trying to say? And it's like, oh God, come on, like, give me a break. So I noticed that a lot in Europe, but I noticed a little bit in the US as far as a little bit more to the point. But I think
to the point, but yeah, like still friendly.
Oh, super friendly.
Kind of just like, yeah, I found them mostly. I mean, metal is, as we would know, like you probably agree with this, Annie, is a very universal language.
Mm.
Like I find metalheads are pretty, pretty good people. I mean, like I remember playing like gigs like Port Augusta in South Australia, which you've probably heard about.
Yep.
And like even places like that. And, you know, about 50, 60 heads or something. I remember like playing that show there in particular. And a guy, I was at the merch, because I always like run straight to the merch desk after we play. I like to just get there as soon as I can and then feel kindly, like he's pretty cool. He'll put my stuff away, which is really cool. They know that I'm like, you know, the face of the band, I need to be there and blah, blah, blah. And this guy comes up and he's just like, looks like he's just got out of jail, man. Yeah, I'm just like, Oh, man. And I'm sitting down. I'm just like, please don't hurt me. I've just played a show in your town. Be nice to me. I entertained somewhat. And the whole gig, you know, he was yelling out, dead skin mask, man, play dead skin mask. And we were playing another Slayer song, but he came up and he was just like, shook my hand, and he had like that real, I like to call it the bricklayer hands.
Oh, yeah, yep.
You know, like shook your hand, he feels like you're going to break your hand. I'm like, oh. And he goes, mate, that was so bloody good. Oh, mate, I'm going to buy a bloody singlet. Addicted to Thrash singer, and I'm going to buy a bloody shirt for me son as well. And give me your bloody stubby holder while you're at it. Gladly hangs over his money. But yeah, now the States, man, I had a really good time, man. I remember all the shows being pretty cool. And I found it to be not that different to Australia in terms of attendance. Like, they're struggling just as much over there, despite their population. You know, as we are here. I mean, thrash metal, of course, is a niche genre, and Lich King are an independent band. They're more internet famous more than anything, which they will gladly admit, I'm sure. Mm. But, yeah, I had such a sick time over there, man. It's one, honestly, that US tour was one of the highlights of my life, dude. Like, I spent so long over there. And it was just, yeah, as I said, I felt like I was living in this van. Like... It's crazy, man.
Yeah, I've never done a big tour like that. I mean, I've certainly been to the US a bunch of times over the years, and I've got a lot of great friends over there, and just seeing parts of the country, and just the country's so varied, like a lot of parts of the world, and I think because the country's so massive, you know, you could be in the far northeast and it's completely different to the far southwest, and vice versa, in opposite corners, and you know, in the middle of the country, it's just everywhere's different, and a different mentality. That it's a colourful place. I think that's why so many bands want to play there. It's obviously there's the history of you know, especially in our genre of music, just being metal in general, or even hard rock. I mean, there's just been so many amazing bands that have come out of that country, and I think just culturally, just, you know, the Americans, whether you love it or not, have drilled their pop culture into all of us over the years through all sorts of different things. So we all sort of gravitate a bit of interest their way. So it's cool to be over there and be a part of it. So, I mean, yeah, for you guys to do such a big run of shows is just super cool. I mean, as I said, I can only imagine incredibly exhausting, but I mean, an amazing experience just to really sort of, and I could totally imagine feeling like you're in the twilight zone and just thinking like I live here, like, you know, I just live in America. this is life. Yeah. This is what it is. Yeah.
This is it. Like, we started with this really small car, because that tour, we booked what did we book for the first half of the tour was this tiny car. It would have been it was a Chevy Cruise, which is the same, I believe, as a Holden Cruise.
Oh, right. Jeez.
Right. So it was four of us, like Con and his wife, May, who did the merch. Thank you very much, mate. And Phil, myself. And I remember, like, in the back, just like merch wedged in between us. Like, I could barely sit in the back, but somehow I passed out. And Phil was like, I don't get it. How can you fall asleep in these uncomfortable positions with your head forward nodding around? I'm like, I'm headbanging in my sleep, man, you know, like. But then the next half of the tour, we got upgraded. Phil somehow pulled this out of his ass, where, like, he goes up, he's worked in customer service a bit more than I have, because and he went up to the when we had to change the car, because we had the rental for so long, the agreement was halfway through that we had to change, get the car an oil change, because it was that long, and they knew how many k's we were going for, and I'm like, right, you need to come in at some point and change the oil over, and just get a bit of a checkup on the car. And while we were in there, Phil was like, oh, is there any chance of like an upgrade to like a bigger vehicle? And they were like, oh yeah, you can have this Ford Transit.
Oh, here you go. Yeah. Nice.
And then Phil was like, I won't be charged anything extra for this. And they're like, no. And he's like, are you sure? And they're like, no, because we've been stoozed around by so many car rental places, dude. We could do a whole podcast episode on that. Like, but this time Phil was like in there for ages, like, so I won't be charged any extra for having this vehicle. And they're like, no, it's sitting here and we're gonna upgrade you to another vehicle anyway, and your agreement's this long, we just figured we'll give you this one at no extra cost. It's just sitting here because it's this tiny little version of the place where we got the car from originally. Mm. We started in like Jersey, and I think this point we were in like California or somewhere like that. Wow. And yeah, we drove all the way around, like a nice big loop, played in the middle, like, yeah, stopped in a weird town. There was one town we stopped in on the way. Sometimes Lich King and us would divert and do different things. And there was one town I stayed in. I can't remember where it was. Kansas City maybe rings a bell. We stayed in this little Airbnb, and it was like inside of someone's house. Have you ever done that before?
Yeah,
where it's like in the States, it's more common where you stay in someone's house and they're living there too.
Mm.
And it was nice. The rooms were nice and everything, but like it was a bit awkward.
Yeah.
Like just us being in there with them. They were not, yeah, nice people and everything. They had kids and stuff, and they had the little gated areas where the kids were, and then we had our own little area. But I just went, nah, I'm going out. And Phil was like, I'm tired. And I went out and hit this local karaoke bar, and I ended up staying out till like 3-4 in the morning because they were just like loving the fact that there was this random Australian dude singing Turbo Lover and Whiskey in the Jar.
Oh, man, that's so cool.
I just kept going. They were loving it, man. It's like little town. It was like being in Moe's Tavern or something. It was great.
Oh, such a novelty. Oh, man, that's so cool. That's so cool. I mean, I'm keeping on the time, but before we go, and we'll have to catch up again because I wrote down a whole bunch of things to talk about. Man, I reckon I've only ticked off a couple of things off the list, so we could definitely talk for ages. So we'll reconvene sometime in the near future and do another chat. But I mentioned before, I saw online a couple of days ago or a day or so ago that you guys had just finished wrapping up recording, or you're about to.
We're about to, yeah. We're about 1.5 songs away from finishing the vocals, and then we've got to do like the gang vocals, and then which is going to be fun because that's just when we just get everyone in there and drink and shout and it's great.
Yep.
But I've just got to finish. There's this one chorus on this bloody one of the new songs. It's just like it's just one of those songs that takes a bit more time.
Cool.
And it's getting used to it. But yeah, we're nearly done, man. And I reckon we'll have this out by end of this year, early next year. I'm just slowly going to drip feed people with singles and, you know, have a proper release strategy for once and not be rushed.
Exciting.
You know what I mean? Like, you know what it's like when you're on tour and you're like, oh, I've got to get this done before we go on tour. It's like, nah. I can just like sit back and let this thing slowly, you know, release to the world, you know?
Well, yeah, you're certainly in no rush now, especially with what's been going on around us. I think, map it out, plan it, take your time and do it the way that you want to do it. And yeah, I mean, time's on your side this time, but it's cool. So it's going to be a full-length album?
Full-length album, yeah. It's not going to be an overly long one because we aim for about 40 minutes. I think it's just sitting below the sort of around the 35 mark. But
cool.
I don't know, man. These days, like, you probably, I don't know if you agree with this, Andy, but like, I feel like songs, people have shorter attention spans these days, and I just prefer to get to the point quicker, you know?
Well, especially with, I think it works well with the type of music that you guys play as well. I mean, it's punchy, it's to the point, and it probably fits in a lot with that. I mean, whether you guys have done it intentionally or not, but just that whole image that you create is sort of this no bullshit sort of, you know, we are what we are, and we get out there and play some pretty straight up, you know, no frills in a way, thrash metal, you know, it is what it is. And so it sort of makes sense to sort of just get to the point and smash something out and give people a bit of a whack to the face and show them how it's done. And as we all know, and many of us always refer back to, one of the greatest thrash metal albums of all time was less than 30 minutes long. So really, I mean, yeah. I think 35 to 40 minutes is a nice sweet spot. So yeah.
I'd rather just get to the point and just like, you know, there's some cool songs in terms of like two, 3 minutes long, straight up like Aussie thrash. I've even like looked at the, heard the way that I've sung the songs, and be like, nah, not Australian enough. Do it again.
Needs more ochre. Like,
we've tapped into this whole ochre thing. And I think being in the States really opened us up to that. Like, you know, like Nick from Lich King saying, a drop bear's real, man. And Phil just like, yeah, man, like it's a thing. And going along with it. And then we wrote a song about it for those guys and in the style that they would write the song, and getting their, one of their singers they had to sing on it. That's cool. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to like the response when it finally does come out. But I'm just taking our time, man. There's no rush.
Now, I saw a comment you made that you've pushed yourself outside your comfort zone a little bit with the recording. Is that sort of from a vocal point of view that you're sort of trying new things, or is just a new way of recording? Like what sort of how have you sort of got outside your comfort zone?
I just wanted to try a few different things vocally. While I was in Europe last year, I don't know if you've ever experienced it yourself, Annie, like just like when you're singing, like you sort of all of a sudden you discover, oh, I've got this new part of my voice that I've just discovered now in this set. Like I think we're playing somewhere in Germany and I hit this raspy kind of thing, and I was worried that I'd like blown my voice out because I did that on the first European tour. I blew my voice out and I really struggled on that tour. But then this one, it was all good, but I hit this like bah, 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 kind of higher raspy kind of a raya kind of sound,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
And I started just to utilize that more with the songs and letting, like, Paul is the secret producer of the band. Don't tell anyone. And he we've got this new song. This is the one that I'm still figuring out the chorus for, where it's like he hummed all the vocal melodies and vocal phrasing to me in a voice clip. So that I just had to listen to in this clip, and I just had lyrics already for it, and I just sort of made it work with the phrasing and the melodies that he had. But yeah, it's sitting in more of that higher, some singy parts, some really heavy lower stuff, some high raspy stuff. It's kind of, yeah, a bit more diverse, I'd say.
Yeah, cool. Oh, I'm psyched for it. I love just hearing anybody sort of just try and step it up a bit, or just change direction a little bit, or expand and just try something new. So yeah, I'm keen to hear it all when it all comes out, or when you start to drip feed things out over the coming months. So I'll definitely be keeping an ear out for it all.
Yeah, I dug your last album, dude. It was cool. A lot more, especially that Welcome Back song, man. Totally back to the thrash roots. It's cool.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were a little bit surprised when we put that out as like the first sort of single, because we're all debating it sort of within the band. We're sort of like, oh, I don't know, maybe we try one of these songs, and it's like, no. Tim was like, no, we should definitely do this song. And we're glad we did, because it certainly got a lot of people's attention, and people that sort of haven't listened to us for a long time as well just, you know, decided, oh, well, I'll start playing this, and, you know, as soon as the song kicks in, it's in your face. So it's, it definitely did the job of grabbing people's attention, and it went well. So yeah, it's cool. Cheers for that.
Nah, it's cool, man. Like, I just love hearing your thrash roots, more so in that song. It's cool. I mean, like, I love it, really. I like what you guys do. I think it's really cool. But yeah, just hearing that, you can really hear the, you know, the Megadeth stuff, and yeah, they're all chuggy kind of riffs. It's cool. Yeah.
Yeah, we're all old school metalheads through and through. We love a bit of old school thrash. I love a little bit of old school heavy metal, whatever it is. Like, yeah, we're there. Mix it all together, churn it through the machine and see what comes out the other end. So, yeah, it's good. It's good. Cool, man. Well, I'm keen as for another chat. So I think we'll definitely have to work out a time to do a round two, because yeah, I have not even scraped the surface with you, and I've got so many things to pick your brain about, because you're one interesting guy. And I think you said it before, I find a lot of similarities in what you've done over the years and what I've done. And I think just the role that you play in your band, and I think creating a lot of your opportunities and just making things happen, I really, really identify with. And so, just watching what you guys do collectively and what you do just to try and put your name out there and doing your own bookings and doing your tours and putting on the festival and obviously all the Hidden Intent stuff. It's just, it's cool, man. It's inspiring for myself and for a lot of other people out there. So yeah, keep doing the good work that you're doing, and the rest of us will be watching and cheering you on.
Oh, mate, cheers for the kind words, Andy. Like, I look up to you too, dude. And let's just keep kicking ass, eh?
Sounds good, man.
All right, if you want to reach out to Chris, you can do so by searching at McThrashy on the socials. You can also go and check out Hidden Intent by going to hiddenintentofficial.com. And they're, of course, on Facebook, Instagram, and the likes. You can go to andysocial.net or andydowling.net, where there'll be a whole bunch of links to everything that we discussed, Spotify links, YouTube videos, everything, nice and easy. And of course, go and click on the description for this podcast in your podcast player. And there should be a bunch of clickable links there. So you can just mash your digits against the screen, click through and say hello to Chris and the guys from Hidden Intent. I'm sure they'll be stoked to hear from you. Now, before we wrap it up, Patreon. Yes, I've been talking about Patreon for the past couple of months, and there is a reason, because I love it. And I'm loving the support from this ever-growing community of people that are backing me and what I do. So support starts from only a buck a month, and there are additional tiers there if you want access to an exclusive weekly episode exclusive to Patreon, I should say. And I'm having a great time getting some really, really good support. It's directly funding this podcast, and it's helping me to expand and make it bigger and better each and every week. And a special thank you to the people that are in my social circle tier, my top tier on Patreon. Thank you so much to Andrew from Perth, Mick G from Sydney, Ash from Deniliquin, Dan from Dapto. Who else we got here? Rod from Brayley in North Carolina, Saul from Oxford in the UK, Patrick from Canberra, Liam from Brisbane, Chris from Sydney, then we've got Brendo from Leeton, Tim from Canberra, and James from Brisbane. Thank you so much, guys, and everybody else that supports on Patreon. It means a hell of a lot, and it is like directly funding this podcast of mine, and I'm absolutely loving it. So go over to patreon.com/andydowling, check it all out. By all means, flick me a message if you've got any questions, and it all starts at a buck a month, dirt cheap. So that's it. Another podcast in the bag. More musicians coming. I'm trying to mix it up with a few odds and ends, some weird unusual, unexpected guests, but they're coming. They're a few weeks away, but in the meantime, I've got a few more musicians coming, so enjoy them. Until next week, folks, take care. Ta-ta.
Larry, please.